Bay, are you there?
Hello, it's Dialogue Conspiracy, Dialogue Assassination, and this week we're going to get right on with the show. I have a guest, and those of you who listen every week know the name. It's Lewis Tacklin. Lewis, I can't believe you're on. You know, it's so far out to have you up here. We have to give some background for those who haven't heard your name, but the regular listeners know all about you. Should we start with your press conference in Los Angeles?
Yeah, you can if you want to, Meg.
In October 1971, Lewis had a press conference in Los Angeles, and I brought the articles here with me today to read some of the things he said at that time. It was covered in the San Francisco Chronicle, Newsweek, Washington Post, Los Angeles Times. He worked for the Los Angeles Police Department as an informer for 9 years?
Yeah.
9 years. And he surfaced in 1971 because he realized that a lot of the things that were coming down the police department were wrong. And he wanted to tell the American people what was happening. And he made a very patriotic gesture. He came forward and put his life on the line and offered information about how the Los Angeles Police Department plans criminal conspiracies instead of solving them. And he gave many, many proofs of how they plan conspiracies and plant evidence against radicals or against the Black Panthers and turn the blacks against each other. And one of the most interesting allegations had to do with the Squad 19, that he said that in the Republican conventions that would be taking place, this was in October that he spoke, in 71, that the conventions that would be taking place the next summer, that there would be a lot of radicals that would be hired as provocateurs, that he would be hiring them to create violence, at which time the government would be overthrown, that Richard Nixon would declare martial law. And at the time, we'll go over some of the original allegations that you made. What were the most important, you think, that people should have responded upon? I might say now, before Lewis gets right on, that he asked, and this is in the New York Times, dated October 25th, 1971. I like to give the dates, Lewis, so people can look these up. Microfilms at the University Santa Cruz, at different universities. October 25th, 1971, informer talks about the police department to prompt radical acts is the lead article. And the allegations he made were printed at that time. And he asked Congress to make an investigation and evaluate what he said was happening in this country. And alongside of that, as of March the 8th, 1973, 2 years later, is an editorial in the Washington Post just this last week. We don't talk about the Watergate affair or the caper anymore. It goes into political sabotage and illegal operations, criminal operations that the White House, the government do. This is what you said 2 years ago.
Right. Well, mate, like I stated, you know, before, taking first of all the Panthers, for instance, how we, agents had went in and set them all up. And using the cases in California, the Panther 18, I testified in their case, and they all got acquitted on those charges. And I also said Angela Davis was innocent. We had set her up, and she was acquitted. And Panthers were acquitted all across America during those two-year interim. So it goes to show that the government did have and did participate in a conspiracy to destroy the Panther Party. But it failed on one level, that the people of America, you know, as far as the court's concerned, the law concerned, didn't believe the law enforcement agencies.
Well, when you had a good lawyer, there's a lot of innocent men, though, on death row who haven't had good lawyers. The public aren't outraged enough. It's when the name lawyers come in, the big cases are getting off. What about a poor person?
Well, what I'm saying, May, is that most of these people were poor, and they were caught supposedly in the act.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Of doing one thing or another, either bombings or shooting out with police. In the Panther 18 case, they had a five-hour gun battle with the police.
Yeah, but you tell me about guys that are up at San Quentin now that are totally innocent.
See, first of all, they don't come under what you call overall political jurisdiction. They were sent there for political reasons one way or the other.
Yeah.
And no one cares about them anymore because
they were
never names.
Yeah, but they were political. They had to get them. They were blocked. They were out to frame them for some particular reason.
You still can't see them saying the average person in the public, I mean,
yeah,
doesn't know who they
were
because it's so quietly done.
It's
a I think with one person just taken out of the community and sent to San Quentin death row, who cares?
Yeah, yeah. You know, and they're totally innocent, right?
Right, right. And what is another thing that's amazing is that Watergate should have never happened. Simply because, like, supposedly after my charges I laid out and asked for the investigation, on October 14th, the Secret Service went to KPFK and started their own investigation, which is like 8 months prior to Watergate.
Yeah. So that espionage squad should have been found out long before.
Right. Yet Watergate happened, and then come to find out, I'm going to tell you, some of the nation's top security men who were guarding the president were involved.
Yeah, well, you were one of the top provocateurs in the country. You were assigned with that espionage team. You had their numbers
right.
in the White House.
Right, right. I knew Martin and White, who was James McCord. And
see, Louis is very modest, and I've always said, I think I've mentioned you. I've been on the air almost, it'll be 2 years in May, and I think I've mentioned you on about 20 programs at least. Mm-hmm. Almost once a program and something, and you were one of the top agents of the country. You had the name of White, Hunt in the White House.
White was James McCord and Hunt.
Yeah, when McCord was arrested, he signed in as Martin.
Right, right.
So that's the team you were working with.
Right. I had gained prominence, as they were, you want to call it prominence. I was like number 14 in the nation in agent provocateurs.
Well, that's when you're selected to kill the President of the United States, you're pretty high up. They trust you.
Right. It just got to the point where I could no longer stomach the things they were doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I at the time didn't know of your work, you know what I mean? And since then, I have become acquainted with your work, and you are really on the right track. Like on the Bobby Kennedy assassination thing, we were closely associated with that.
Yeah.
To the point where, you know, like, oh, we were quite a few agents with that night.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when you surfaced and had your press conference in 71, I called up the radio station right away, and mm-hmm. I said, I want to meet this man, you know, and you went to a group of people and went into hiding and so far, that it took us so long to finally get together.
Yeah, well, I wasn't so much fearful of my life as getting the truth to the public.
To the right people.
So before they got to me.
The tragic thing is that the public, it's all here, all the newspaper articles, here's a thing from San Francisco Chronicle, you make an allegation here, and it was, I mean, they gave you 3 pages in the San Francisco Chronicle, and the people didn't move on this.
Well, what's so amazing is the way they done it, May. I'm going to tell you, on one hand, they're saying he passed the lie detector test, and he is telling the truth. On the other hand, but you can't believe him.
Well, you see, the actual, I'm writing an article now called Murderville USA, and it's about the fact that people... The radicals, the people, the blacks, the Chicanos, the students, the anti-war people, everyone should have just come running to you. I just don't understand why they didn't just pick it up and say, this man is telling us something. You know, that's the phenomenon I just don't understand, because I would tell them about my research, and I was on the air, and I've done this research and written to public officials, and they turn you off. Even the people that are supposedly on your side turn you off, and that's why I want to make contact with you.
Well, most of these groups, may I'm going to tell you, feel that they have their thing together. In other words, they hate to feel that, hey, man, you know, going to be infiltrated by the police, you know. And what's amazing is most of these radical groups are fighting the same thing I said existed, yet they say it didn't exist.
Yeah.
On one hand, they're fighting it all their lives in the streets, saying, hey, the police repression, police conspiracies. And when someone comes and tell them, hey, there is a police conspiracy and there is repression, no, it's not.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that can't happen to us.
But not in America. That's it. I say there's a conspiracy to kill a President Kennedy, they say, oh, yeah, I guess there is some conspiracy. But I say, let me show you how it worked. They say, oh, no, forget it. It couldn't be.
Well, this is nothing new. I'm going to tell you, we sit back in World War II and say, oh, no, it's not going to happen to us. And we watch Hitler take over Germany.
Yeah.
We watch Hitler take over the world. And then we finally said, oh, it's happening.
And it keeps going on. Tell about the CCS at Los Angeles. There's certain terms and things that people really don't understand that were written in your article then that are so pertinent now.
Oh, you mean like...
the offices down there, what they
A criminal conspiracy section is like the political arm of the Los Angeles Police Department. It was created by L.J. Younger before he went to Sacramento. It deals specifically, you know, with the political conspiracies, not so much in the sense of stopping them before they happen, you know what I mean, but in the state where we will create some. You know what I mean? Yeah. If none is happening, we just go out and create a few.
Yeah.
And then there's SINI, which is like Special Investigation Identification. Those are like the goon squad of the police department.
You call them the Gestapo.
Yeah, the Gestapo, because they watch not only the police department, but all political organizations, plus a lot of businessmen. You know, uh-huh. They keep an eye on everybody. They're above and beyond, you know, they're above and beyond the police department. And then there's SID, which is like the district attorney's office. It's a Special Identification Division. Uh-huh. And those are real Gestapo because they carry automatic weapons and you never know who they are. Now, they watch everybody.
Yeah.
Including, you know, CCS and SCS and SINI. Then there's intelligence. And they all are special equipped men who all they do is gather intelligence information on everybody. Mm-hmm. Like the Big Brother's watching you.
And if they want somebody, they just plant evidence against them, go out and get them, they just sit and have a conference.
Intelligence. If somebody wants somebody, they'll give information from them to another unit.
Uh-huh.
What's amazing, all of these organizations, no matter what office they're in or what place they're at, all have the same hitting on the door, public relations. Public relations. And if the public has been aware of what's been happening in the last 2 years, almost everybody who's been involved in a conspiracy or who've gotten arrested in conspiracies or whatever, from the IT&T incident all to the Watergate incident, always with public relations.
Yeah, the Mullen, the public relations firm in Washington that Howard Tent worked for was Howard Hughes and IT&T. But the thing that I never understood, there were so many trials going on up in the Bay Area that were conspiracies, you know, and you mentioned them, and the lawyers up there wouldn't respond, and they didn't want to touch conspiracy, you know. Like yesterday, Rochelle McGee wound up his case, and then all of a sudden, about an hour before it was to close, they wanted to get hold of Tagwood, you know. Ramsey Clark's calls, all of them want Tagwood. It's 1 hour before they're winding up the case, and they've had all this time, and you've made it so clear to them.
Well, it's like I think we were talking about at your house tonight. It's not that they don't want to touch conspiracies. It's that the people who hire Ramsey Clark and who are working supposedly for the freedom of McGee and anybody else in the Bay Area, I'm going to tell you, these people know that there are others involved who, if I came forward, you know what I mean?
And told
the whole story, that the real conspirators would go to jail. And, mm-hmm. And this is what they're afraid of.
So they keep their friends out so that innocent men will die.
Right, and they sit back and hope that 12 men on the jury will say, well, maybe this guy really didn't do it, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And this is what's been happening.
If they're lucky, their friends get off and the other men don't die either, right?
Right. And it's amazing how much, the other day we were sitting there and his calls from Los Angeles and things. Hey, Ramsey Clark's looking for you. He's been calling from Washington and things. Hey, I would tell you, I worked on Ramsey Clark at one time.
Yeah.
You know, and why wait till the last minute?
Yeah, just before the jury is supposed to go out. Oh, I see the lines. We'll take some calls in a minute. I just want you to talk. You want to take one call and then we'll talk about your book. Yeah.
Look, I was in the insurance business.
Let me ask you, talk about the book that you have coming out soon, The Glass House Tapes, what it's going to be about, so people can look forward to...
In The Glass House Tapes, I'm going to tell you, we try to explain the overall position the police departments and law enforcement are in today. We show how conspiracies are really actually taking place, how to see and understand what a conspiracy is. We deal with the new IT&T phone tappings and the new Bell systems they have, the phone tappings. We show how in the last 20 years, I'm going to tell you how politically inclined the police departments have gotten, how far right they've gone. They talk about law and order, but all the Klan talked about law and order too. See,
so yeah, they're breaking all the laws in order to get their kind of order.
Right. Well, it depends on what you consider law and order, and for whom. See.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to bomb a bank, like you were saying, you sit in a room with the police and they talk about which Bank of America, and then one of you goes out and just goes in and bombs the building.
Right.
And
right.
Then you'd be sure to at least know that the radicals did it.
Well, this has to do with Middle America. See, once Middle America wakes up, see how I put it to you. Here's people sitting secure in their homes, blue collar and white collar workers. And they see on television, here's been one of our banks where I keep my money bombed, you know.
Yeah.
We need more police. Put these radicals in jail. Because what you're showing the people is, as long as they see, they have people have a tendency, as long as it's happening on the other side of town, let it happen. They don't care. So you need more police? We're not going to vote more money in for it because it's happening over there. Well, then you start bombing a few of their banks.
Well, this is the massacre in the middle class, you know, sweeping in on the homes now, killing in Chicago and the Gulf Coast, the Virgin Islands, and the Sharon Tate thing, coming in the middle of a home in Beverly Hills. This is the kind of thing that the provocateur is doing to the study.
I'll show you something else that was amazing. You remember that how long, for a few years, they were talking about stricter gun control?
Yeah.
But what they did, they waited until after almost three-fourths of, like I said, middle America had bought up guns. And half the black communities have armed themselves. Then they said, we need stricter gun control.
Yeah. You know?
And then what's so amazing is the National Rifle Association comes in and they use their lobbyists and they stop it.
Yeah.
You know.
But there's enough guns now to go around for...
Oh, a good war can start now.
A good war can start, yeah. There's so many things, allegations you made a few years ago that are so true. And like the police putting narcotics into the black community.
Yeah, in the same interview, if you check the papers, I forget what the issue was. It was in the Times. It is a intelligence officer gets busted with $300,000 in narcotics.
Yeah.
You know, one time, you know. He said, well, I was framed.
Yeah. Well, why was Richard Nixon, you know, it's so funny, just today, he's coming out for death penalty, and he says, the headlines today, you know, the front pages in the papers this morning was, mandatory death penalty, and I'm going to be without pity. The title of the article was Without Pity. And Richard Nixon suggests the death penalty for somebody who hires a killer or involved in sabotage or espionage. Wouldn't he get the mandatory death penalty right off the start?
Well, I'll put it this way to you, May. First of all, we got all his top dogs in the Watergate thing that he had, all the Republicans, high-grade Republicans. And I think the way the law reads, if you did conspire, not if you committed the act, but if you conspired to commit the act, you know, so therefore I think Nixon was going on conspiracy himself.
Well, of course, yeah.
You know.
And this thing that they were planning in San Diego where how many people would be killed that you would be responsible for killing? You were employed by the police department. How many deaths did they actually figure they'd need down there?
Well, when it was all over, they figured it'd be blood all over the streets. You know, they figured they killed quite a few people.
Well, you see, one of the things to back up what you're saying, you know, is that down in Miami, William Lemmer was hired just like you, you know, and he had a press conference in Miami. He went to the Civil Liberties Union, and he had a girlfriend in May that he was driving south from Washington down to Miami to get ready for the conventions. And he said, don't come down to the conventions. There's going to be a bloodbath. See, just like you said, there'd be in San Diego. When it was moved from San Diego to Miami, and this boy was working on the East Coast, the job you would have done, but you had surfaced and exposed him, and nobody took it seriously. And he's telling her, there's going to be all these killings and bloodbath. And yet, she didn't report it to police. Nobody seemed to care.
Well, can I ask you one thing, May? I think Nixon got the biggest electoral votes ever. So who believed Watergate?
That's right.
You know, so the Republicans bug a few things. You know, it's like, hey, you know, like the Democrats should have been up in arms, but they didn't.
I know.
You know.
Because they're infiltrated, too. See, there is many provocative...
Media helped create a thing around McGovern, like he was supposed to be the super nut and radical, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they made Nixon like an angel.
Poor
Richard didn't have nothing to do anything like that, you know what I mean? But I'm going to tell you, Maurice Stans and the rest of them all belong to Nixon's cabinet. And like this is, I think his cabinet is the most corrupt since Ulysses S. Graham. You know how it was.
I know. I mean, it just seems that there'd be grounds for impeachment if it were to be possible. Because, first of all, they haven't even gone into the Wallace thing to investigate that murder. Long article in the New York Times today on the Wallace thing and how Mitchell cornered him, and you can't be independent, you'll hurt Nixon and you'll hurt the cause. They were so afraid of McGovern, you know, and even in 71 at the time you were surfacing, they were really heavy on Wallace, you know, like you can't dare run against Richard Nixon. So finally, when he was getting the Maryland votes that night and he was getting Michigan, he had to be shot. And it just seems to be the Nixon administration. The article I did in The Realist goes from the Tagwood allegations to the Watergate and says if you go into the Wallace thing, you could remove them.
If a person really checks, really looks at the Wallace thing heavily, he can see where the government conspired in that. Because here, a man gets arrested, and 10 minutes later, they say, well, he crossed the bridge here and he stayed at this motel, and we knew we suspected him all along.
Uh-huh.
So well, yet they didn't walk up to a candidate who was going to be guarding and shooting.
A candidate who'd take 20 million votes against Nixon. See, that's the thing. Like, We say that there's indifference, you know, and people, it doesn't look beautiful, but I'm sure the Eagleton thing was placed and the Wallace thing. And now he says, well, I've got a mandate to do anything I want, intending to chop all federal budgets and the OEO and everything all along. I think he was so dishonest, the campaign was so...
Well, the people gave him this. This is the thing. The people gave it to him because of their blindness, their stubbornness to accept fact.
See, they have accepted, the people have accepted the media. They come home to work every day, they come home, they turn on the news, and they accept what comes over their airways. I was just reading an article on brain control. There's a group in the Senate that are investigating altering the brains with chemicals and government experimentations, you know, like the one down in Alabama with the men that had syphilis. And the question was, if you give them electroshock and chemicals for brains, is there any chance of using this for oppression at the time of political repressions? And one of the doctors who's in charge of this from Maryland said, no, that we have a more effective way with the media. He put it right on the line. You know, we just use the media.
You know, they're quick to say, you know, like we're down in like the New Orleans thing, you know, there was no conspiracy. When it's not against them.
Yeah.
When it's like they kill a man, they say, well, guess what? You know, there was no conspiracy down here, you know.
With Mark Essex, you mean, the shootout, yeah.
And then, all right, they go back to, and they kill Kennedy, two of them. They say, well, no conspiracy, you know.
How long do you think it's going to take for people to catch on?
Quite a long time, the way that we're going. They kill Martin Luther King. They say, there was no, here's a man who gets all the way out the country. You know what I mean? But there was no conspiracy. You know, and then the Watergate thing, there was no conspiracy. Now, you know. The public has become totally blind to what conspiracy really is.
Yeah, that is the thing, that there's a whole vocabulary, there's a list of words, you know, I was talking about in the car today, the prisoners of war coming home have a whole vocabulary of words to learn. And the New York Times had a list of about 30 new words, like what is to be square or right on and different terms, but none of them were pertinent to today's facts. There wasn't anything like the cover story or what conspiracy or anything.
Or like wet stuff, executive action, terminate with extreme prejudice.
What is terminate with extreme prejudice?
Kill anybody, you know, like is kill an agent.
Kill an agent?
Yeah, kill someone.
You mean when you're sitting in the office there?
In other words, like if they send you out and say you, May, and they tell agent, one of their agents or agent provocateur, they say, well, go terminate May Russell with extreme prejudice.
Uh-huh.
And it means he goes out and kill you.
Yeah, that means we're really...
Wet stuff is a thing where it's like assassinations.
But on
a political level. And the executive action is a political assassination.
Oh, what about that person that you talk about that was framed, that they used you in the police department, that a murderer in Van Nuys and Younger was running for office?
Yeah, he's not on death row anymore because there's no death penalty, but... Joseph Lee Jenkins, he's still there.
Totally innocent.
Yeah, totally innocent.
And Younger was running for office?
At the time, yeah.
At the time, and the girl was raped, and so they wanted...
Raped and killed, they need the valley, in other words. The valley brings a lot of votes.
Yeah.
And he had to get murdered.
You see, I found that all these murders and massacres and things always come in election, and the guy who's running says, well, I'll pick them all up, like the Boston Strangler. I don't think that's the guy that did those accidents at all. And they picked him up at the time of election because the DA said, I'll solve that, and he solved it. And here's a phone call. We'll take this and see. Yeah.
Hi, May. During one of your summer shows, you were mentioning about the thing that was supposed to happen in San Diego and about that they were bringing thousands of young people in to, you know, the agent provocateurs were bringing these people in to provoke this violence.
Uh-huh.
Were these people aware of what was happening, or how did they get them to come in the first place?
Oh, here, I'll let Lewis tell you. Wait a second.
I'll explain it to you. What they did, they got an island. I forgot the island name. They had one road in. And they said it was set up all public utilities up there, free medical, free food, everything, you know, for all the people coming in to demonstrate. So what they did, they made it easy for everybody to stay there. You understand what I'm saying? In other words, they give them free medical, free food, free room and board. Come and stay, you know, and demonstrate all you want on the island.
And then what happens?
And then I'm going to tell you, it's surrounded by water on three sides and one road. So they can just access, you know, access road. They cut off with like one tank. You know, they have a concentration camp where they set up.
And then they bring in other provocateurs on the island?
Well, what I'm saying is, what was going to work out is, just think if they were hiring them, the youth, to monitor the convention. So here's something happened within the convention. You got, say, 3,000 people outside, and pandemonium confusion starts. And then those 3,000 outside will get jumped on, and you got to save 100,000 at a rock festival because it's going to get a rock festival now at the same time. Uh-huh. And here come four or five guys in bloody to a rock festival and say, hey, man, they're killing us downtown. Pandemonium and confusion would create, you know, mass hysteria. And mass hysteria, like half the guy would fight.
Yeah.
And the agents was in the crowd who would not be under all this pressure, would be doing the shooting and throwing bombs at the police and things, and the crowd would get messed up.
Yeah, like Chicago, the 1968 riots. Same they thing. Had the cameras ready at all.
Well, that was only a testing ground for the theory later on.
Yeah. It was really messy. Uh-huh. Mm. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Well, you know, the way the plans go, it's very hard. It's a good thing to speak to these young people. It's very hard to visualize that there are dry runs. Like I say, Greece was a dry run for an assassination to overthrow this country, you know, or the Philippines. Here's another call. We'll take that one and see. I get these lines mixed up. I feel the South Korea and the Philippines being overthrown just prior to the elections here was a dry run for how the martial law, how people would respond. The very next day after the Philippines was overthrown, there was a headline that said the people like it. Now, how would you know in 24 hours what they like?
Yeah, well, they do all this by computer. In other words, what they'll do, maybe they'll give a computer a hypothetical question.
Yeah.
About a hypothetical assassination, and it'll give them back what the typical answer, you know, uh-huh. would be. Here you wake up in the morning, you're rushing to work, and you see in the newspaper, well, here's a country, you know, 4,000 miles away, and the government's been assassinated. You see what I'm saying? Well, you don't really care because you're trying to get to work.
Yeah.
And when you get home, you're so tired when you get home. You see what I'm saying? So they got it planned to where the average American don't want to hear it.
That's right.
Now, he doesn't care. Well, so it's 3,000 miles away. It don't affect me.
Yeah, well, there's about, I have a list of 84 military dictatorships we've overthrown. So the martial law that you were talking about, you know, is very,
easy. They've been practicing. They have been practicing for you for like
years. You think they'll still do it?
Eventually, if the people of America don't wake up, I'm going to tell you. Well, look where we're at now. Nixon talked about the great, with his New Deal or something. And how money was going to be good for everybody. And right now we're going into recession.
Yeah.
Our dollar's like worth, I had a friend go to Canada and give a taxi driver $1, you know, and he gave back 85 cents.
What, do you think the martial law that was put off because the men were arrested at the Watergate, do you think it's inevitable the police state?
If, like I say, if the public don't wake up to what's going on around them, or if they keep letting the politician place people in offices high as the law enforcement offices and the Supreme Court in the way they're doing, they'll eventually be stripped of all their rights.
Well, I've got a guy like Emil Younger. He says, I want to be the governor of this state, and he won't answer the charges that he hid the conspiracy to kill Robert Kennedy. He won't bring out that evidence. The evidence in every conspiracy case is hidden. You know, they destroyed all the records of the Bobby Kennedy thing, or you can't get access to them. The Supreme Court won't reveal. You know, Reagan wants to be president, and Younger wants to be the governor. How can you stop the people that are part of the conspiracy?
Well, John Conley became. Like, yeah. You know, see, so, you know, what I'm saying is they're talking about John Conley for president. So I'm going to tell you, if John Conley can be president and he was involved in the Kennedy assassination,
yeah.
Why not Younger be governor? So, you know, it's a thing where they have a caucus. The public doesn't care.
The public doesn't care. No, they let the people that are involved in the conspiracies work their way up.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, I think that the charges that you made, a lot of them. Yeah. Should we take this call?
Yeah, let's see.
Okay. Yeah.
May, you were talking about not being able to understand how come the American public is an outrage.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about the fact that more people did not vote at all than voted for Nixon in the last election. And that really scares me because I think two things are happening, that this country is too fat and contented and therefore won't believe that things are going, and that courageous people like you and like Tackwood and I hope like me are just going to be dragged down kicking and screaming by a kind of Gestapo thing that happened in 1934 in Germany. And I'm really frightened.
Well, the indifference is frightening.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, people sat on their asses and didn't vote in the last election, and that's what got that madman in the White House.
Look what Lewis was saying in 1971. He was saying, here's the Chronicle. A lot of people in the Bay Area and up here read it. They read the Chronicle. He says the Los Angeles Police Department, the Criminal Conspiracy Section, and the Special Investigative Section are guilty of dirty tricks, of murderous tricks, against militants, blacks, and whites. And not one militant. Hardly were there 36 militants that came afterwards, Lewis, and said, who are they? Let's help you.
Not one.
No. Did they come to you? And he said the CCS had prior knowledge of last year's Marin County courthouse kidnapping attempt of George Jackson's fatal escape from San Quentin prison and allowed both to proceed, the courthouse shooting and the George Jackson, and that goes into the San Quentin Six. We can talk about that if you want. They allowed that to proceed and lives would be lost. I've been trying to reach people in the Bay Area for so long to get them to reach Tackwood, and they're afraid to touch it. Okay, we'll take another call here. Yeah.
First, I wonder if you heard that there's an attempt to do away with, to abolish the 22nd Amendment. It was on the news today.
Oh, yeah.
And also, I'd like to evoke some discussion on whether there might be provocateurs doing the same kind of thing you are in assassinations research.
Oh, yeah, let me tell you, just because I quit don't mean they stopped it. You know, they, like they had at least 300 or 400 under me and maybe, you know, a few up above me. And like every department has theirs. You see what I'm saying? From the Army Intelligence to the local police. Yeah.
You mean, do they still have provocateurs now?
What I mean is, are there provocateurs masquerading as
police?
Assassination researchers like yourself?
No. I'm, first of all, can I say one thing to you? I don't believe so. I mean, I couldn't lie and say yes or no, but I wouldn't think so.
No, wait a minute, Lewis. There are, unless it's to create a lot of mistrust, there is a lot of feeling among the researchers that certain ones of them pose as researchers to find out what we know, but are actually provocateurs that work for the Ford Foundation of the CIA.
Well, first of all, I'll put it in a different way for you. They have, how would I put it to you, provocateurs are not paid to just watch people. They're paid to create trouble, create distrust and mistrust, and you know, like to go into research, it takes a long time. Our jobs have been, I was on the world, you know, 3-4 months, we were out in and out. When you begin to work with a person for years, you're in a little trouble.
Yeah,
you get to know you see what I'm saying, and you get to know if a person's an agent or not.
Right.
But I tell you what, I'm gonna tell you, if you suspect somebody of being an agent, you know what I mean, watch out for them, baby.
Okay, thanks. Yeah,
I'm curious, I wouldn't know about. Because the people have heard about what things are going on in these conspiracies, but I don't think it's because they don't care nothing's going on. They don't know what to do about it.
Yeah, well, that's a good question.
What
can the people do? Like, I'm on every week and I talk, but I give them the thing about it is that even when you tell them what to do, people say, write on, and you talk to them next week, and you say, did you write a letter? And they didn't. Like, the appointment of Patrick Gray now is one of the most important things happening in the country. John Mitchell's out, Robert Marion's out, Leonard, the LEAA, the Justice Department. If I say, write to the congressman, the Senate Judiciary,
well,
how many?
First of all, may most of those, unless it's just one, if one person just writes, I need to throw them in the trash, but I can suggest something if you have other interested parties within your community. Get together and start a citizen investigation research committee.
That's right.
And when you feel that something is going wrong, then you send a letter from that committee. You see what I'm saying?
Writing letters and stuff, that's all good and fine, I think. But you're writing letters to the people who are doing the bad things, and how can you expect them to any good to come of it when they're the ones that are doing it? And here you're writing a letter to the guy. It doesn't seem logical to me.
Well, you have to write to your congressman. I'm going to tell you, there are congressmen I feel that you can trust. I don't feel Kennedy's an agent because he lost 2 brothers, you know, in the interim. John Tunney is pretty nice in California, you know what I mean?
Cranston is fairly nice.
Yeah.
I do not like Eastland.
Is it what I'm saying?
How are you going to know which guy is which and who to trust?
Because you read your daily paper, you've got all your history.
I think this is something that you have to get with yourself with. I mean, you know, you gotta start trusting somebody, because you can't change it by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? So what I suggest is, I'm going to, and if you feel this way, the next time you have an election in the community, elect somebody you trust.
Yeah. Well, say Mr. Burton wants to run for the as governor of this state instead of Younger, and instead of waiting till 2 years from now, begin to understand him now and spread the word so his name is known.
So you see what I'm saying? In other words, if you don't trust somebody you don't trust, they're trying to get somebody in there you trust.
Yeah, well, okay, it's just like you say, a lot of these people who were arrested were in public relations.
Right.
And all these people, they put up an image of the person who's running for the office or whatever, and you don't really know the person. You never met him or anything. You don't know him personally. You don't know what kind of a person he really is. And you know some of his policies and stuff, and maybe some of the things that the PR men have written up for him and some of his flowery speeches. But what he's really done and what he's really doing,
Well, you can always check on the person.
You can check if you want, their background, their education.
I'm saying get yourself a group. And if the group feels that somebody is not right, then check on him and expose him.
Yeah, before he gets into office. Here, I'm going to take another call now. Yeah.
Yeah, how's it going?
How's it going? Everything's fine.
Okay, yeah. I've got a question, you know, that I had with a friend of mine. We've got a little heated argument. And I think that Nixon sort of thought that his two strongest Democratic candidates against him was Muskie and...
Humphrey.
Wallace.
Yeah.
And so, all right, he wiped Muskie out real quick, you know, in the primaries with all the rumors and things, and then found that Wallace was another candidate, so he had him shot, right?
That's right.
And figured McGovern was the least, you know, the least powerful of the three candidates against him because of his so-called, you know, radical platform, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering whether or not he had anything to do with his downfall after the convention when he found out that McGovern was stronger than he thought he was. You know, if you knew anything about that.
Well, can I say one thing to you? The killing, the shooting of Wallace served two purposes.
Yeah, it served two purposes. Like
one, it took a man who had 20-some million votes out of the picture. And two, it put fear in Edward Kennedy's mind because Edward Kennedy... McGovern ticket would have won.
Yeah. Edward couldn't have. After Wallace was shot, Edward wouldn't dare.
You see what I'm saying? Otherwise, if you scare your opposition off and then you spread vicious lies and rumors about him, you got to let him win anyway.
Right.
And just before the convention, he had made his big televised appearance in China and Russia, so he called himself a great statesman.
Right.
I mean, if they allowed McGovern to go to China, he could have done the same thing. What did he do there? They traded Pepsi-Cola and wheat and Boeing airplanes. Well, if McGovern had done it, they would have said it was a sellout.
We got two panda bears, baby.
Yeah, two panda
bears. Yeah, really. Yeah, he really proved that before the election. You know, the farce about the war was ended at that time, you know, so-called at that time. And
if you go back and study Nixon himself, here is a man who was a McCarthy man for days, I'm going to tell you, and help butcher all kind of comments and say he wouldn't go to China never. Here he is sitting there drinking Coca-Cola, trading panda bears.
Really?
You know some kind, I'm going to tell you, that if a hypocrite can be a president, then Nixon's one, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Well, he's a master politician, and that's, you know, that's what middle America wants,
But maybe there is a way that the man could be impeached. If the espionage thing, they still keep going into the Wallace thing, they stay with the Watergate. And I said that in the article I did in The Realist, stay... But just that evidence and this espionage team and keep weaving out like they're doing every day. They come to new stuff.
Well, first of all, I'm going to tell you, like, it'll be just like in 1929 soon. No one will impeach him. What will happen is we'll go into such a depression, you know what I mean? And have bread lines and the WCC camps again, and Nixon will still be talking their talk, you know? Because the public will not wake up yet. But when I see now that the United Auto Workers don't want Gray. I'm going to tell you, labor is finally waking up to what's going on because labor is starving to death.
And the minorities are catching up. People are, since the election, a whole new scene of America is really
coming. But it's too late now. We've got 4 years of them coming up.
Yeah, but one of the things is that everybody watches them very closely, and they can't function unless there's secret events, secret memos, so that the way they operated before is under scrutiny now.
But the way what is happening now, Nixon has become a power within a power. He's saying, well, since the American government put me in so strong, I'm just going to take over the reins. In other words, he wants to be the dictator now.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, it's a
see that the way he's been floating all these budget cutting and spending in the wrong places.
Well, you know, like if you look at his rise and the rise of Hitler, there's similarities in them.
Yeah, it's
Hitler
true.
Hitler had Dr. Goebbels, you know what I mean, and had quite a few defeats.
And this was the first minister.
Right. And Nixon has Dr. Kissinger, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's all in the budget. The whole similarities is so much alike.
The money's taken now from Congress to the White House.
Right, you see what I'm saying? In other words, like Nixon is slowly but surely cutting Congress off. You know, yeah. So he makes all the decisions now.
He impounds everything.
If they don't make a decision that Nixon likes, what does he do? He impounds the money. He vetoes the bill. You see what I'm saying? Well, he's becoming a president with dictatorial powers.
See, he's doing everything, even though the martial law was called off and the squad was taken. Through the domestic intelligence, where you kill Wallace and you make a fool out of McGovern and ruin Ted Kennedy with the Chappaquiddick to smear him, he assured his own victory, and now he has total power.
Yeah, Nixon is a student, and matter of fact, a scholar of one book. If I had to pick one book I felt he read heavily and became his Bible, was I'm going to tell you, was The Prince.
The Constitution. He studied constitutional law. He works every word out.
Well,
yeah,
you see what I'm saying? The Prince is the acquisition of power. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, and he finds every loophole in it, too.
He finds every loophole in it. And he uses it, I'm going to tell you, and he uses the Constitution to
rearrange it to the book.
No, to enforce this princely thing he's building up. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Well, like I say, if the people of America just take a look and read Mein Kampf and look at what Hitler's doing and what Hitler did, they'll wake up and find out Nixon is the same thing.
You know, talk about books. We got about 5 minutes left. How about your telling us about your book that's coming out?
Oh,
let's
yeah.
Let's do that. Okay.
I got a book coming out called The Glass House Tapes, which was reviewed in the Chicago Journalistic Review, and the publishers feel that it's going to be one of the bestsellers of 73. And the government feels it's going to be the black stains in their administration. It deals with what we've been talking about, what we've been working on for 9 years, how the conspiracies take place, who are involved in conspiracies, how to pinpoint a conspiracy. It deals with how the police have become electronically concerned with people, how they you have Big Brother watching you at all times. They can tap your phones now. They can even tap into your television. Yeah.
And where are these devices, too?
Oh, yeah, where they're located. It shows how just through you watching television, people watching television from, say, 6 to 11 every night, they can be totally, totally brainwashed, I'm going to tell you, in a period of, say, 2 years into anything they want. And what's amazing, it seems like America's getting more passive towards criminal violence that's been portrayed by the government.
Yeah.
So therefore, I'm going to tell you, maybe their plans are working out. It also states how the think tanks are working. It's a conglomeration of a lot of people's ideas along with mine. And I hope some people out there will be interested enough to buy it. It'll come out in June, after June 6th.
The first printing, Lewis said, is half a million copies,
yes.
It's going to be a Glass House Tapes. We've talked about it on the show many times, and in the article that I did after 9 years research on political assassinations, the most important thing was to relate my 9 years' work to what Lewis said was happening and show how the Watergate pertained to it. And it just fits like a hand in a glove. We finally, my academic work and your practical experience.
Yeah, I'd like to say this. Right now I'm on my way out of the country for various reasons.
I'm joining you.
Out of the country for various reasons. I stopped here, But in the future, me and Ms. Russell will work closely hand in hand. Anybody, any interested parties out there, we appreciate, with your help, any kind of way you can.
Yeah, we want to help a lot of innocent people that are in prison, too, and help them get out, right?
Right, right.
Lewis knows a lot of people that are there that shouldn't be there, that were part of the conspiracy, and they have a hard trial coming up. They have, I hope Rochelle's thing goes well. The jury's in now, and there's a big trial coming up, the San Quentin Six. We want to help them.
All right, like on the San Quentin Six, I'm going to tell you, if the public becomes involved and go and watch, if you want to see what a conspiracy looks like, go and watch what they'll do to those people, and support them. And if you support them, I'm going to tell you, this is when they stop with conspiracies, like everybody, like you were saying, why the guy's in jail, because he had no support from the public.
Yeah, if we all go there and support it, we'll be calling attention to it and show you how conspiracies work and make the lawyers to stick with the evidence. They'll be out. Don't you think they have a good chance of getting out if you stick with the evidence?
Right.
And we're going to work very hard to undo some of the conspiracies they've done, and then we're going to work hard to expose in it maybe a simple book form, another just a handbook of how conspiracies are done and how to recognize your provocateur in your community or someone who comes into the family, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a lot of work to do, and I think the people learn fast and want to know now. That's one thing. A few years ago, they were more apathetic, Louis.
Right.
I got a lot of young people and up at Cabrillo and Santa Cruz and at, out in Salinas, those college kids that are really turning on asking questions who weren't here or where when John Kennedy was killed or Bobby and Martin Luther King, but can see it now, can see those murders up in Santa Cruz, that know something is happening, and up, you know, these cases in the court.
Right.
And I think we'll get more cooperation and can get things moving. I hope.
And just like I was, one thing before I leave, like the Juan Corona thing, I'm going to say, I don't believe one man who couldn't speak very little English killed 25 people, but they needed a scapegoat.
And that's linked to the Santa Cruz murders, too.
Right. They needed a scapegoat, so they picked one man and said, well, give him the 25.
And then the terrible thing was that the jury wanted to get home. They said, well, they're anxious to get home. They're restless, so they forced a vote. I mean, this man could spend his whole life in jail, wife and children and innocent.
Yeah, well, this is another thing I'm trying to show you. Here's a good conspiracy of how the public feels. This came out in the papers, even. You know, the lady said, hey, I don't want to convict him, but everybody else want me to go home.
They
want to
go for dinner. They miss their family. So, well, our time's up. Thanks a lot for coming, Louis. He's on his way out of the country for a while, and I'm described as one of the most important people in the United States. I've done 9 years' work. Henry Miller, who I respect, used to say, tell me who your heroes are, you know, and I'll tell you who you are. And Louis has been one of mine for 2 years because he did things that he was part of the system. He was used. He saw the difference. He saved a lot of lives, and he's going to keep doing that, make up for all the other part, right?
Thank you, Louis, for coming.
Thank you, Louis. Okay.
Mayor Bressa will be back again with us next Thursday at 5:15. You're listening to KLRB FM Carmel.